Baker and Brown's NBA Basketball Podcast is back. We are back here, May 1st, annual redraft pod. I am joined virtually by the one and only Paul Curtis. How are we doing?
Dude, I'm doing good. This is, I was telling you off the air, it's my favorite yearly tradition, Nate. The only time I'm ever on a basketball podcast in 365 days. So I'm feeling great.
That's good. That's good. First question right off the bat, when is your new son going to make his podcast debut on Baker and Brown?
Yeah, so I've been talking to him about that, and my hope is by the time he can say any sort of language that he can be right on the podcast. It might not be a whole lot of content, but he's been watching enough games with me that I'd hope that he'd have some a half-decent analysis that could do him better than it could probably do me, at least in my betting on NBA. But he seems pretty smart. He's pretty smart at this point.
He's made you some good money already betting.
No way. I don't think you could do much worse than how I'm doing. So I think I'd imagine he wouldn't do any worse. So I'd hope he could do better. But he's watched a lot of ball. So yeah, he'll be here in no time, brother. A year, right. Maybe a year.
All right. That's what I like to hear. So first of all, we're a little crazy because it's May 1st. And well, in the NBA, it's the playoffs right now. And it's such an exciting time. And probably one of the most exciting playoffs I've seen in the last – at least first rounds. I think every first round matchup I've really, really liked. My least favorite was the Mavs and the Jazz.
Won six games too.
Still won six games. Plenty of stuff going on there. Lots of antics, plenty of drama. And so all that being said, we're insane that we're doing a redraft right now because everyone wants to talk playoffs. And I just don't think we can't not talk playoffs. So, and it kind of coincides with what we're going to be talking about because we're doing the 2019 redraft and there's a couple players that are still in the playoffs in the conference semifinals right now. We just had game one of the Bucks Celtics and game one of the Warriors and Grizzlies. So let's just start there. Did you watch the Boston game? You were texting me. I didn't get a chance to see it. So I only have seen highlights and whatnot, but did you watch the whole game?
Yeah, I saw the first quarter and most of the second – no, sorry. Some of the first quarter and the whole second half. And then I got there kind of halfway through the halftime. But, yeah, I saw a lot of that game. But it was hard for me to totally evaluate, I guess, what was happening because I missed that first portion. But it did seem as though Giannis is – like, again, I come in and it looked like Giannis was playing well, but then his I don't know if he was shooting poorly or if he was taking too many mid-rangers. I didn't see all his misses because when I was watching it, it seemed like he was doing pretty well. But I think it looked like he settled at points this game, which is why his numbers didn't look that great. But there were moments when I felt as though he was kind of the most dialed in he's ever been to being the guy that doesn't need to score. Meaning, and I don't know how many assists he ended up with today. I don't know if he got a triple-double or not. Not that I think the triple-double itself is the reason why they might have won. But it seemed as though he was pretty dialed in on doing what he needed to do for his team to win. But then there were also other moments where it did seem – I saw this in the first quarter where I think it was Al Horford who was on him, who actually like was able to slow him down more than I've seen anyone slow Giannis down, and that's a 35-year-old Al Horford. And maybe that's just because he's intimidated by Boston, maybe not having Chris Middleton is just one less outlet he thought he had in the first quarter. But then as the game went on, he started to figure out how to play make and get other guys involved. But that's what I saw from the game. Did you catch any of it?
No, I didn't catch it. I actually did turn it on in the fourth. I think they were down – the Celtics were down 13 with, like, 4 minutes to go. And it just was looking a little yucky. So I turned it off and figured I'd get more out of the highlights and Twitter threads. So, yeah, what I saw, I mean, I don't think Giannis hit a single three. I think he was 0% from three, 54% from the line, something like that. So typical – I mean, you've always been skeptical on Giannis's shooting. So that's typical,
but he's – yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Or were you going to say you've turned around on it?
I know, maybe not on his shooting, but I've at least done a 180 on who Giannis is maybe from 2 or 3 years ago. And obviously he's been the best 2 or 3 years of his career probably since then. But he was struggling with like shooting, that's what you were saying.
Yeah. And it just doesn't matter at this point, even if he's struggling with shooting. Like he's still commanded the game. He was by far the best player on the floor. Everyone, you know, after this game, everyone on Twitter is – saying Giannis is the best player in the world, best player in the league, all this stuff, which whatever, you know, everyone's reactionary after a dominant performance. But you brought up Horford, which is interesting because I mean, Al Horford's defensive metrics were quite high this year. Like even though in his old age and he missed a bit of time, he's still a very, very good rim protector. Can still move laterally decently well, especially against a guy like Giannis or Bam. I wouldn't put, like the Jaws and Curry's on him in a switch, but even still, like against some of these guards, he'll have his moments. I did notice though that Milwaukee was really trying to make Al Horford make decisions, whether it's on defense or on offense too. That they're kind of making him uncomfortable because he's not, he's not like a quick release shooter by any means. And so Al kind of decides if he's going to shoot, and he'll shoot it. And if he's pump faking, it's quite obvious when he's pump faking, because usually he'll just do the fake and then go to his right, like 95% of the time.
Do you think that's because Robert Williams is on a minute restriction, which is why he played so much, and why Milwaukee thought that they could just put him in those positions where he has to be the decision maker?
Yeah, I didn't see the game. I don't know how much Tice played. I haven't really looked at the box score too in depth right now.
Four minutes for Tice.
Yeah, okay, because history has shown Tice is just not a great matchup for the Bucks. Like Giannis just kind of dominates him. Grant Williams has been a good Giannis quote unquote stopper, if you will, but you need to share the load with a guy like that. No one player is going to guard Giannis for 48 minutes. It's a team effort, just like it was a team effort for the Celtics against Durant and Irving last series. I think the high minutes on Horford is probably because he's a bit more savvy with Giannis and Williams too. I mean, Rob Williams, they started the game together. And I think you need like two very competent bigs to guard Giannis well.
Yeah.
But then on the other turn, I think Brook Lopez had himself a bit of a game too, and looked pretty dangerous. Yeah. So
yeah. I love Brook. I didn't realize that I still like Brook Lopez, because I felt like he had that 2 years ago, the COVID year. He was getting hyped for Defensive Player of the Year with Giannis that year. And then I don't know if he made first team or second team all defense, but he made one of those two teams. And then since then, people have kind of been like, whatever, Brook Lopez, who cares? But from what I saw tonight, he still, I would say, in big moments can step up. Can we go back to, sorry, you said something that I thought was, that I don't really like about Twitter at all. So me for the three listeners, I'm joking. There's many listeners to this podcast, but I've been off Twitter for a few years. I get back on this obsession with like who the best player in the world is. I'm like, who cares? Like, am I the only person who feels that way? I feel like it's like, oh, 1 minute it's Durant, and then it's Jokic for MVP, or it's Embiid who's pissed off that he didn't get MVP. And then now that Durant's out and Jokic is out and Embiid, whatever, didn't play or is hurt, it's like, oh, we got to crown Giannis. I'm like, they're all great. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't get the obsession over labeling someone so importantly to be the most decisive player. There's probably 7 or 8 guys that I would say at any moment could have a great game and Twitter's going to explode because they're the best player in basketball. And I don't know. I just don't see it. I don't love that. I don't know. Maybe it bothers me more than it should, because I'm like, I feel like Giannis is one of the best players that we get to watch in our lifetime. And whether he's the best player because Durant got eliminated after having 4 bad games in a row or 3 bad games in a row, I'm like, I don't really care. I don't know. Maybe people are just obsessed on finding the best of some.
Twitter is the most reactionary place on the internet.
Yeah.
I think in general. So, yes. And, now with, Twitter Spaces, and Twitter has these like subgroups. I don't know if you've seen this feature, but there's like these subgroups that it's almost like you have like similar like the Reddit style, where you have subreddits where you can like subscribe to a certain like niche group. And I'm in a couple NBA ones, because really Twitter is like I just used to follow basketball. And it's crazy some of the takes that I'm seeing in some of these subgroups. And yeah, I totally agree. It is ridiculous. One player or even they're talking about like Durant's legacy, Kyrie's legacy. Is Kyrie a top point guard?
Sure.
Is it Durant's rings relevant? All this stuff. And it's just, I don't know, it's just stupid for lack of a better way to put it. But people are reactionary. On the flip side, playing devil's advocate, it's great that so many people are engaging right now in the NBA. I feel like fandom is at an all-time high, especially because, of like sports betting opening up, there's more avenues for basketball and whatnot. I mean, NFL's just doing the draft right now. So there's no NFL games, which is another heavy hitting betting sports platform. But yeah, I think it is ridiculous, and you know, everyone's going to react and have their different takes. But that's also the beauty of Twitter, and then you can laugh at it, and you can have your jaw drop moments and all this stuff. But
yeah, anyways, let's move jaw drop.
Jawbreaker, yeah. I really resisted that was a passing thought as I said that. I was like, I'm not gonna do that, and then I'm not gonna segue into the next game, but here we are. Let's talk about Dubs Grizzlies. I watched that game. I thought it was great. I thought it was it's always fun to see when the Warriors get tested. We'll talk about the elephant in the room. Draymond getting a flagrant two, I thought was a little excessive. Not as excessive as his celebration, but for getting ejected.
Yeah. Dude, but people are going off. I feel like everyone's saying like a flagrant 1.5. In the moment, again, I don't know the rules well enough to know what differentiates a flagrant one or a flagrant two. I was trying to remember the last time that I'd watched a game where a guy got ejected on no technicals like
just
that.
Straight up.
Yeah. I don't remember the last time I'd seen a game like that. So that's why I was like, to me, in my mind, that's a pretty big call and on a stage like this. And I don't know the two refs who were in, because there was a lead referee and then another guy. And then there was a bunch of, anyway.
Yeah. So
I'm not sure who is. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so Kane Fitzgerald was, I think, the lead ref tonight. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Courtney Kirkland as well. But yeah, Fitzgerald was, I think I tweeted out today, speaking of Twitter, I thought that was a really poorly officiated game both ways. I thought there was a lot of dumb calls. The out-of-bounds play at the end of the game was clearly off. Dude, Dylan Brooks.
What the hell happened with it? Why was that is that a new rule? I heard them saying on the broad. I thought both sides on both ends. Was bad calls. But what happened with the – I didn't get what happened with the play at the end.
Yeah, so with the challenge, and Taylor Jenkins is known for being the worst challenge calling coach ever. He calls the worst challenges. I forget the one what their challenge was today. Actually, it was the Dylan Brooks charge.
Oh, are you talking about Steve Kerr?
Oh, sorry, that was Kerr's challenge. You're right. Yeah,
yeah. Which also was a block, by the way. That to me,
yeah.
Am I the only person who was tripping on that? The same thing with both Jaren Jackson's fouls that he got called that were both also, I thought, actual real blocks. But he got called for both those. But that Dylan, I'm like, Dylan clearly moved his hips and his right foot when he, I don't know, that to me was bizarre. But I don't
care. Charge. Well, we're getting on so many tangents here, but charges are also in just a crazy stupid place right now in the league.
Yeah.
The fact that you can, you know, just kind of step in the way of a player. At like, you know, when he's doing his steps, because I guess the technical rule is right now is when the player is in an upward shooting motion, that's where you have to like meet him.
Okay.
But a lot of the times, like as soon as the player takes their first step, you can kind of, they're kind of telegraphing where they're going to go unless they're super crafty with their second step. But, or if they're doing like, well, we talked about this on the phone on Friday, the Malik Beasley charge against Ja, like when Ja's going off 2 feet, like you can tell he's about to launch off 2 feet. And I thought Beasley was there perfectly, but you know, I get it, playoff basketball, they're not going to make the call. And you know, all the TV networks are, you know, pumped that they have this jawbreaker or dunk of the year, whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Got like 12 million views or something like that on, on the video itself. So, yeah, charges are just in a weird spot. Going back a bit, Taylor Jenkins, I think, is really bad at calling challenges, and I think really bad at some of these like late game situations, which is why Coach of the Year, he's not really in the conversation for me. I think the Grizzlies have progressed really well as their roster, but even we're jumping a bit ahead here. I want to get back to the Draymond thing. But
what happened on the out of bounds? That's what I want to know. That last out of bounds.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Why'd they call a jump ball?
Yeah, so because I think it's too late in the game, there's something – again, I don't know – you say you don't know the rules as well around this stuff. Same here. I actually don't know. But from what I understood and what I read is that they don't, like, go to, like, an instant replay for, like, non-challenge things or, like, non-fouls. And because they called it out of bounds, and the two officials, you could tell they looked at each other. They had a different take on it, but they kind of did the officials timeout, and then they were like, okay, like we're just gonna, that was what was called on the floor. We're gonna do a jump ball, or because the officials disagreed, we're gonna do a jump ball. So that's what I think happened there. But it's just dumb because a simple, you know, replay coming to the scorer's table, you could take a look and see it was pretty clearly off Dylan Brooks. But Jenkins, even the fact that the Grizzlies are bringing it up, they had a perfect opportunity for a 2-for-1, and Ja just did not like push the ball at all. And I'm like, you're the Memphis Grizzlies, and you're Ja Morant. Like, your specialty is to go downhill.
Transition.
And the last play of the game, where I would say 9 out of 10 teams are looking to get a shooter, a shot off with like 3.6 on the clock. These guys are giving it to Ja Morant, like pretty much in the backcourt at 3.6. And then I saw you like my tweet. It's what I call the James Borrego special, where you throw it to your big at the top and he just bounces the ball to the guard in rhythm and he goes to the hoop. I just thought like the Grizzlies should have just pushed for a 2-for-1 there, even if they get to the foul line or just get Ja to drive. Like Ja was pretty unstoppable on the drive until he met the best defensive player in the world, Stephen Curry, when it mattered most.
I saw that. That was dope.
So I mean, I don't know. Did you have any thoughts? Like, I kind of went over a few things there. The Draymond thing, the officials, Taylor Jenkins.
The Draymond thing's tough. Like, I'm not the biggest. I don't necessarily understand the difference in flagrant one versus flagrant two. I mean, I could probably think about it aloud, but I don't know if I have the exact accuracy in being able to describe that. To me, that I think if you want to call someone of that caliber out of the game and eject them, I would have assumed it would have been something more than that. But I don't know. I could be wrong. The rule book could say something very clearly. People were saying that he got him in the face with kind of both hands, and then the jersey was kind of anyway. It's a bit weird in that way, but yeah, I don't know the rule on that. My question, obviously the officiating is different in the playoffs, and I'd say I've noticed it more this year than in previous years, and maybe it's just because I wasn't paying as much attention. And I was wondering today, I get that playoff basketball is different, and I would say I notice it most in the defenses and the speed to which players are defending, to me, or in the physicality. That seems to be the biggest difference in playoff basketball that then actually swings things offensively to make those players react quicker as well. So that, I think, in general, speeds up the game, which is why I think we see playoff basketball being so different. And now maybe an outworking effect is if you're moving faster, you are going to be more physical, which means you are going to foul more. So maybe the refs are reacting to that happening. But it does seem bizarre, the amount of fouls we're seeing in these games, even with the speed increasing. And I wonder if the way that they're officiating is enhancing the playoff version of basketball, or if it's making it worse. But maybe, again, that's kind of maybe answer my own question and saying that if you speed things up, people will be more physical and will foul more. I don't know. I find it kind of frustrating at times to watch. But
have you watched a playoff game this year and thought, okay, that was reffed well, or there wasn't any crazy calls?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm thinking about the refereeing way more now. But yeah, I'm sure if I don't think about it after, right? If I'm not reacting to there being too many calls, then I'm sure they're doing an okay job. Yeah. But today's game, I thought, was particularly weird. And I'm never one to rip on officials. I'm like, they're doing their best they can. And then some of these slow motion calls that they get right, you're like, wow. Like, I could have never seen that at the speed of the game. Obviously, they're paid very, very talented officials. But I could never have seen that at game speed. And they're seeing some of these things. So I'm not harping on them. But today, again, it was both sides. It was so bizarre. And I think I realized it. It was the Jackson had his like fourth or fifth foul on a block on, I don't know if it was Kuminga. He had two of them. And I was like, it looked like he got ball in that hand that I would say is a no call. You could probably call it either way, but it was a no call. And then the Dylan Brooks, Steph block, that to me was like carbon copy of block. He moved it like it. And then even too, if Unimi didn't move his feet, he shifted his hips into Curry, even if his feet were still on the ground. So, and then they even went to the booth for that and had it wrong. And then obviously the call at the end with the tip out of bounds. It was a weird game, I think. And it's hard, though, because, again, I'm not trying to say the refs aren't doing their job, because they obviously have a very difficult job. But I just thought, again, it was bizarre.
The weirdest one to me was when Jordan Poole hit a wing three right in front of the Grizzlies, right in front of Taylor Jenkins. and got closed up by, I think, Melton and Brandon Clark. And Brandon Clark fully, like, swiped his head.
Oh, yeah. And, I didn't even see that. And it wasn't called.
And it wasn't called. And I was like, what? That's a pretty obvious call. Like, he got physically, like, you know, he didn't hit him hard or anything, but Brandon Clark's hand clearly hit the guy's – hit Poole's head. And I was like, okay, that's super weird that you would miss that. I thought it was very obvious. Poole was kind of holding his head after out of, like, what? Disbelief. Like, you didn't call that. But, yeah, it's weird that, you know, you have these games and the officiating can change things so drastically. The Draymond thing, just real quick, and then we can move on. First of all, you have to give props to the Warriors for winning without Draymond for the entire second half. That's, you know, no small thing. Even if people think the Grizzlies are not in the same tier as the Warriors, they put up a good fight, and Draymond, the impact that Draymond has on the game is huge.
Yeah.
And so for them to pull it off on the road without Draymond, was great. And seeing him dressed in his street clothes and sunglasses from 2005 was amazing as well in the tunnel. But the Warriors, they're fighters, man. Like they definitely, like when the going gets tough, like they know what to do. They're calm. These guys, like Curry said in his post game interview, he's like, you know, the championship basketball is in our DNA, minus some of these young guys. And those young guys stepped up. Like Kuminga had a good game. Poole obviously was amazing, who we'll talk about lots, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So yeah, it was great for them. But the Grizzly side of things, like I said, I think they should have pushed for a 2-for-1 at the end, especially against the Warriors, because you're always just 1-3. If you keep it in a one possession game against the Warriors, like, you're toast. Like, you know that they can get a 3 off in no time.
Yeah.
And you know that most of their free throw shooters are automatic. Despite Clay missing, Clay missing 2 free throws was weird, man.
Dude, what the hell happened on that? It's crazy. Yeah, that's to me where I'm like, and even I think Steph missed another free throw tonight. It's bizarre. Steph, somewhere there's a stat, I think ESPN said it during the broadcast. He missed 20 free throws this season, and he's already missed 11 or 12 in the playoffs. Like, what's going on? And Clay misses both. I don't know. It's bizarre to me. But anyway.
It was bizarre. And what a luxury that, you know, we just expect these guys to hit their free throws and don't even think about it. But totally. Yeah, it was a great game. I thought the Grizzlies played super well. I thought Brandon Clark was a hustler. Jaren Jackson had probably one of his best games of his legacy.
Yeah.
De'Anthony Melton had some really good minutes. Xavier Tillman had some good minutes. Ja just started hitting threes. I think he was 4-for-9 tonight or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, everyone was like, you let Ja shoot and, you know, there's not much he can do, but he obviously knocked a couple down. So yeah, it was good to see.
I think it's just, that's the one thing I would say though, is why I think the series would trend Warriors, why I would definitely lean Warriors. I saw a lot of people or heard people talking Warriors in 7 or the games, we're going to see 7 of these games. I think if Jaren Jackson Jr. pretty much has the best game of his life, Draymond gets ejected, Jaws making threes, and Dylan Brooks should have fouled out. Plus, Steph didn't have a crazy – like, he had a good game, but not a crazy good game. Clay's bricking free throws and had a bad game. To me, I'm like, all those things should lean Grizzlies, and instead the Warriors still on the road, or on the road for the Warriors too. So I think, yeah, it's hard for me to think that Memphis – they're not going to battle, but I think the Warriors won in a game that where a lot of things went Memphis' way. But
yeah, that's a great point about all those things going in for the Grizzlies' favor. But I think when they get back to Oracle, I just like everyone knows the Warriors get going at home. It's just such a different team. It's a different story.
Yeah, not in Oakland anymore though. Now we're in San Fran. Who knows?
No, sorry, you're right. Chase Center. My bad. Just their fans are just crazy because those fans are – they know what their team's capable of. They know what those guys can do. And I just don't see for the Grizzlies – I think we talked about this a bit off the air about the Raptors, how – where I find the Grizzlies are similar to the Raptors in this sense, where they don't have just kind of that bailout player or that guy who can just say, okay, I'm going to hit like a hard two to keep us in the game, or I'm going to find the open guy. Like I'm going to attract a lot of defense and then make the right pass for the Tyus Joneses of the world to like hit a three to keep us in the game in kind of those like in between minutes. I just don't think the Grizzlies have that guy, man. Dylan Brooks, he's had a great year, Canadian player. Shout out to the fact that he's Canadian. I think he's just crazy, man. I don't trust him at all. Every time he shoots the ball, I'm like super skittish. I'm like, oh man, is that really the best shot you could do right now? And yeah, I know he hustles on defense. He guards, people really well. I'm still not sold on DB at all.
Dude, it's crazy watching him. I know he made a few tonight, but his misses are horrific. Awful. Like, I don't know how many air balls he had, and if they weren't air balling, they were off the backboard bricks. And I think it's because – and I actually really like Dylan Brooks. I think it's just because he plays so hard. When he gets into it, they're always going to be strong. And that's why, he made a few shots tonight, so I'm not trying to discredit him. But he is just so dialed in defensively that I think that really throws off his shooting motion. And it looks wonky when he shoots it too, I agree.
I would agree. Yeah, the motion is weird. The release is weird. And, I mean, he's – I think like one of the Grizzlies' better shooters, which is a little scary.
Yes. But
in those moments where you need a bucket and Jaws off the floor, I just don't think, I trust him like that. I honestly, it sounds bad. We'd rather have the ball in Kyle Anderson's hands or D'Anthony Melton's hands in those situations.
Or Desmond Bain. Where's Desmond Bain tonight? I felt like he wasn't even playing.
Yeah, he just went cold. I think he just went cold. I think just shooters are going to go cold. He was probably the best player in that Wolf series for the Grizzlies. And honestly, probably the whole series. I think if there's an argument to be made, he was the best player in that series throughout. But he just went cold, man. Like he had the 1-3. He kind of shook off Curry in the beginning there. And then just couldn't get going. He has a very – his shot is very – I'm trying to think of the right word. I don't want to say robotic, but it is – when he shoots the ball, he's usually shooting it the same. Like his body is the same. He needs to be set, whereas like Dylan Brooks or, Clay can come off a screen and just fire, and their body can be leaning one way. Desmond Bane, I haven't seen – I mean, I haven't watched a ton of Grizzlies this year, unfortunately. Mm. But Bane, I think, needs to be set. And I just don't think you can do that a lot of times when the Warriors are know that you're a shooting threat and know that you can hit those set shots.
Right.
But he – I mean, game six against the Wolves, he was cashing. Like, so.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But he – I mean, also – they also came off of six games against the Wolves.
True.
And the Warriors series was not like, I don't know. I don't want to discredit.
No, but yes.
You hear what I'm saying? Like the Warriors series wasn't as stressful. I'm blanking on.
Well, the last three games, the last three games.
Oh, thanks.
Close. So last two games for them were all, I don't know if they were one possession games, but the games were close. Were the first two, not they weren't close, but they won game three with that Draymond steal at the end, I think it was last Sunday. And then they obviously lost game four in a close game. And then they won again in a two possession game, I think game five. So, but yeah, they had some time off. But anyway, should we move on to the draft? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I was seeing this off the air too. I have a feeling our top three for me, my top three are pretty interchangeable. I have a feeling I know which way you're going to go, which is why I want you to go first.
Okay.
But yeah, let's just get to it, man. Go ahead. Start us
off. So are we going to snake or are we going to go back and forth?
Let's go back and forth.
Okay. So yeah, for 2019, I was back and forth on who I was going to take for a little bit, but I'm actually going to take Zion Williamson, our first overall. And now I'll get some challenge on that because Zion's played hot. I got 85 games here that he's played in his career. But my issue with not taking him, here's the back and forth I had. I thought Zion's year last year and he played last year, I count 61 games, where Ja this year played 57 games. I think Zion's year last year was as impressive or better than Ja's year this year. And now, I don't know if he comes back. And again, so this is kind of the conversation I'm alluding to, why I mentioned Ja's, because Ja would be the other person I would debate for the number one pick. I don't think I would debate anyone else. We'll talk about the other few guys who could be in the conversation, but to me, it's between these two. And I think the bigger thing is I thought Zion in moments looked more undeniable than Ja did. And I, not to say, and I don't think either of them are known for their shooting. I know Ja's a better playmaker. Both of them defensively have a lot of ways to go. I do think defensively, I think there could be a time in his career that Zion could be quite capable, but there were moments in his first year where he looked like he had no idea what was going on the floor. But I don't, and I think Ja's going to be very limited to what he can do. Now, it might not matter because Ja might play around a bunch of really good defenders where he might just stand in the corner and guard a random shooter and not do a whole lot. But he might, I think, against good teams, especially playing in the West, he'll probably get switched onto great guards for the rest of his career or great forwards and have to figure it out. Where Zion, I think, because of his athleticism, could get to a point where he defensively is great, but I am projecting with that. I just think last year's version of Zion, to me, was more, I don't know what the right word is, had more potential for greatness than Ja's year this year did. And that's not to say that Ja's year this year wasn't great, but I think both of them finished at the rim really well. Zion shot better last year. At least his true shooting was better. His field goal percentage was better. Field goal percentage in and of itself doesn't really matter a whole lot, I think, with the way shooting is done now. But Zion took better shots. Ja still likes to take mid-range occasionally. Not often, but he still does. And obviously doesn't work out that well. We saw at the Warriors game today that if you force Ja to shoot, he might hit sometimes for sure, but there's a lot of times that he won't. So I don't necessarily trust his shooting. If I trusted Ja's shooting a little bit more, it might make me take him over Zion. But I think because I just think what Zion does is a better version of what Ja does. And he's bigger. And he's more potential on defense. So anyway, there's a long-winded first overall pick, and that's why I chose Zion.
This is why I love these podcasts, man. You always end up surprising me. I think I have you figured out, and you always end up surprising me. So right off the bat, Zion did not make my redraft.
What?
Yeah.
No.
I am a firm believer.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. And so maybe I'm surprising you, which I think also happens. I'm a firm believer that, well, I don't usually shift on my draft picks. I was out on Markelle Fultz, still out on Markelle Fultz. I was out on Zion, still out on him. I was out on Jalen Suggs, still out on him. Just like you're talking about, what's that guy coming up that you don't like?
I'm out on Jalen Suggs, by the way.
Oh, Jabari. You're out on Jabari.
I'm out on Jabari. I will die. I'm out on Jabari. Again, I'm only basing it off the one game I watched where apparently it was the worst game of his college career in the Sweet 16, but I'm totally out on Jabari. But anyway.
When I have these qualms or hesitations about a player, I have a much harder time apologizing and saying, okay, I was wrong. With Zion, for context, if I'm picking, because we're making these picks based on what we know now. You know, these guys a couple of years into their NBA career. So we know, a little bit about what we're getting, some of their tendencies, an idea of what their ceiling could be like, their struggles. And for me, the health is just not worth the pick for Zion. Yeah. I'm not going to do it. If I was a GM, I can't risk that much. And you've seen how New Orleans has been very, very hesitant to play him. And then I don't know if you saw, but apparently he said that he was going to surprise everyone and play in game seven if they took the Suns to seven game series, which I don't buy that. I think that's dumb. Yeah. This guy was doing windmills 2 weeks ago and then we still weren't getting a clear injury report. He was rehabbing in Portland this year, all this weird stuff going on. And I can't trust his physicality. If I'm, picking someone in the draft, I don't want to pick a guy who's made out of glass. And, the New Orleans Pelicans probably didn't expect him to have so many complications, but all those kind of like what ifs about Zion, the weight stuff, which whatever, I'm not going to get into. Whatever. But the fact that he is just like what you said, he's only playing around 60 games. He's always a risk for injuries, and you just don't know when things are going to go south. And in his, I mean, he's only a couple of years into the league, but he hasn't done anything like a playoff run or been in serious contention for a season award for me to be like, okay, this might be worth it. So he's not even on in my top 14.
That, see, to me, I'm like, I guess we have different ways of going about doing it. Hey, well, I'm happy. Maybe I shouldn't have taken him one. I should have saved him to the very end and taken him as a steal.
But I thought about taking him at like 13, 14.
No way.
Like, yeah, yeah, just to throw into the podcast.
Did you? I feel like, were we watching a different player last year? Like, I was playing out on Zion. He was unbelievable. Like, there were moments I've never seen a player get to the rack like that before, watching him play basketball.
Yeah, he was very good. I don't know. I guess I'm just super stubborn, and that's probably, not to my benefit all the time, but I'm super stubborn.
Wow. So I will give you this. Obviously, the injury stuff's a big deal, and it's weird. I think there's a weirdness to it with him and the Pelicans that I'm not doubting, but I just think the ceiling of Zion is higher than anyone else in this draft, even in John, whoever we're going to talk about after that. But you're not going to take like Matisse Thybulle at 14 over Zion. Like, to me, I'm like, you're taking a guy who's going to play maybe 15 minutes a game the rest of his career over Zion, who could be the best player in the NBA. I'm not saying he will, but I think that's his ceiling, right? Like, he could be that good. Everyone's just waiting to see if he will ever even get close to that. But anyway, we can move on.
I'll give you another spoiler.
Okay.
You mentioned Matisse Thybulle.
Yeah.
He also did not make my top 14.
No, he didn't. He didn't make my top 14 either, for the record. So I was just throwing out a name who's gonna be tossed around maybe, but I don't have him on my board.
Well, at least okay. So Zion's off the board at one. I had Ja one. We already talked about him lots. Two, like I
wait,
said.
Wait. So are you gonna take Ja right now, or what are you doing right now? What's your game plan?
Well, yeah, I'll take Ja at two. The top three to me is pretty interchangeable. We talked about Ja lots. Already with the playoffs and what you were mentioning before. I just think, like, similar to Zion, when a player is that exciting and that much of a personality and also, like, just jumping up to 27 points per game, kind of out of nowhere, I'm in on it. I think it's great. My thing with Ja is I've thought about the best way to say this on the pod. I am just a fan. So I just see, what I see on the internet and how I interpret that to what it means to me, what I see John Morant play games, how I interpret that, how his style of play is, how good he is, all this stuff. I watch T. Morant as well, and I interpret that what it is. Right. I would hate to see John Morant just get steered in a direction that his dad thinks is right, similar to like the Kawhi and like Uncle Dennis thing. And again, like, I'm very cautious saying these things because these are like human beings' lives and families.
Right.
But if I were on the Grizzlies staff or I was someone close to Ja, I would be very cautious on what his dad is instructing him to do in the offseason. Right. And I would be very harsh on Ja on what he needs to work on in the offseason. Because I think he kind of came off the rookie campaign. Everyone's like, okay, he's going to bulk up. He's going to get into the gym. He's going to be shooting. I would be shooting all summer.
Yes. Right.
No, totally. No more jumping on tires. And again, like, this is why I'm so hesitant. I'm like, dude, I'm just a dude. Like, I don't know what's best for this guy to develop. But I would think that he needs to develop a couple things. The jump shooting's obvious. The walk-in three is obvious. He needs to get that. You mentioned the mid-range. He needs to stop. Like, the floater game is there. You have great floaters. You have amazing finish around the rim, probably one of the best in the league. You need something else in your arsenal in the mid-range. You need the pull-up too. Like, you need the Devin Booker going to the rack, stop, pull up. Little thing.
You need something
else. Yeah, you need something else. He's got like a pretty good like post up. Like, you saw that in the play-in game last year against JTA. He cooked him like twice. He cooked Gary Payton tonight. He was a little smaller with like the post up, but it's still a floater. So those are the things where I would like want to see John improve on. And I would all that long-winded answer, all that being said, I would still take him despite some of like the weirdness we see with like his dad saying he played like trash last series, even if it's as a joke. But
yeah,
I've gone down a pretty far YouTube rabbit hole with John, like his dad.
Yeah.
And so I just some weird dynamics, and I hope that Ja is able to really, really like push himself in the off season and become a great player. Anyways,
how does he know all these guys? Like I saw him hugging Curry and Clay after the game. Like how does he, is he just connected? Like, I don't get it.
I saw that. And I was like, if I was on the Warriors, I would say F you. Like this is playoffs. Like this isn't Karl Anthony Towns Sr. Like this is no.
Yes.
Like we're no friends here. And I don't know. He's just kind of like that, becoming like this LeVar Ball type father figure in the NBA. And he kind of rubs me the wrong way. I don't know. I agree. And again, like I'm super hesitant saying all these things because who am I? I'm just a dude. But being critical of a guy's father who, like, there's something to be said for the father showing up and supporting, and that's great.
Sure.
But yeah. I just feel like sometimes it can just distract a bit from what the game is.
It's weird that he's kind of like a weird mini celebrity sitting beside Usher with the lookalike thing, knowing all the players.
Yeah, that was a crazy PR stunt by the NBA. Crazy.
It's all weird. I don't get it. Okay, so I'm up for number three.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so I don't love – well, actually, no. I love both the two players that I'm between, but I'm going to take Darius Garland at number three.
Really?
Well, as much as I want – who? Wait, we can talk about your next pick. Yeah, I think I'm going to take Darius Garland at three. I think what I saw this year from him on Cleveland, he proved that he can be pretty much the guy on a team that – not – again, I get that they didn't make the playoffs – but that probably that was in the position where they had a top eight record in the Eastern Conference. And yeah, they were tailing off a little bit. I know there were people who thought it was their defense that kind of made it who it was, but he was kind of the guy on their team who was looked to get a bucket when they need to. He shoots the ball well. I think he's an incredible passer. I think years could go by and he will be considered a top 10 passer in the NBA at a certain point. And again, I think he just ran an offense of what would have been a playoff team had there not been a play-in tournament. And again, I feel this is such a caveat in saying that. But I think what I saw from him this year made me believe that he can continue to do that. And then you add in Sexton, who was hurt. I think that would help how he looks offensively, because that would take some of the load off him, at least on the defenses that he was seeing. And so I think I just trust him a little bit more than I would trust some of these other guys who have done it more so in a way playing. Again, I guess we'll talk about the next player after this. But I think I've just seen enough from Garland to think he made the All-Star team. He was deserving of making the All-Star team. And he was the driver of a sufficient playoff offense, I thought, or a team that could at least make the playoffs. So that's why I'm taking Darius Garland at three. Is that a surprise to you?
I wholeheartedly agree with everything you just said. I think we saw him in a really cool situation in the play-in game, and he stepped up huge. I love him because of his poise and patience. He had pretty much a 38 assist percentage this year, which for those who don't know, assist percentage is just the estimated amount of time that when that player is on the floor, they assist the ball. So yes, pretty much 40%. And to give you context, CP3 had 43.4% this year, which is really high. And yeah, Garland, I think, like, just reminds me a little bit of CP3. And the passing's great. And even though he's a bit undersized, I really like him. And I think he's a very confident player. And it was really good to see him develop this year. So yeah,
you make the point of like the pace. He can be a quick guard, but I think the pace to which CP3 can control the game, I don't know if he's there yet, but I think Garland can definitely get there.
No, so he's definitely not there yet. I mean, like Chris Paul's, and I mean, we could spend a whole podcast talking about Chris Paul against the Pelicans, but yeah, Chris Paul's in his own tier, but Garland, I think, is on a similar trajectory where he's really controlling the pace of the game. He knows when to speed up. He knows when to make the pass. He's got a lot of, you know, young players that like to run the floor around him. I really like him. So I'm at four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll go Jordan Poole. I thought you were going to take Poole way higher, Paul.
No, I can't be biased. I'm trying not to be biased. And I think with Poole, the sample size is big enough. But you should talk about Poole.
Yeah, I mean, with Poole, this whole draft, so I don't know what you think, but I think this is one of the better off the dribble like shot creation drafts we've seen. And I wanted to say like bench scoring, but that's a little dumb because most, you know, we do redrafts 3 years after they happen, and most of these guys are not like starting after 3 years. So yeah, most of them are scoring off the bench. So I retracted that thought. But Poole to me off the dribble is amazing. I mean, I was watching the game today, and I was especially the first half, I was just watching Poole, like even when he didn't even have the ball. And so I was really trying to take a deep dive onto him. I said this to you on Friday as well. I think sometimes he looks for his shot a little too much. I saw that the one play, I think it was in the first half, he kind of just brought the ball up, did a sidestep, just took a three over Jaren Jackson Jr., missed it. I think GP got the board, got it back to Poole, and then he just, again, shoots it immediately. Or he came off a screen and shot it immediately. And I'm just like, okay, I know that you have the green light to do that. I know that the players that you play with in practice do that. But I think that can be a little dangerous, especially with those longer threes where you can get caught in transition, which I don't think in transition he's quite there yet. I mean, the Grizzlies like to run on the fast break. And the Nuggets did as well. But I don't know. I don't think – all that being said, I just think Poole is just such a baller that you got to take him. I mean, 30 points – over 30 points at his age. That's the second time he's gone over 30 in the playoffs. Yeah. He's just amazing. And some of the shots he was hitting today was unbelievable. Like that one I mentioned when we were talking about the game earlier today, Brandon Clark hit him on the head. Deep three. Yep. He had two like heat check threes where it totally changed the trajectory of the game. Draymond got a steal, passed to Poole. Poole did like a shot that only Curry is licensed to do in the NBA.
Yes.
Poole did it as well. Pulled up from the FedEx logo in the forum. Yep. And, you know, he's just that guy. You can see him developing. You can see his confidence growing every game. I think he really got put on the map last year on the play-in game where he almost dunked on LeBron.
Yeah, totally.
Because so many people were watching that game, and then I think that kind of put him on the map. And then I have to also say Jordan Poole had a really, really, you know, like started over 50 games this year. He had a really good opportunity with Thompson being hurt. And so you can't discount that. He had a good opportunity. He stepped into it, and he became – you know, he developed in a larger way, similar as the last guy, Sexton, or Garland, with Sexton being hurt. He also had a more of an opportunity, and we saw him develop at a rapid rate. And so you can see even Ja as well. Like Ja was the only point guard in Memphis when they drafted him, and so he just had the opportunity. And so that's a huge piece of these redrafts and a huge piece of why I think these guys go where they go in these redrafts, because all these guys that we've talked about have had, you know, more wiggle room to kind of do their thing and develop.
Yeah, I agree. I think with the Poole or Garland thing, I think there's a scenario where I could totally have taken Poole over Garland. I think I just saw Garland do it kind of not on his own, but again, Poole was put in an ecosystem where he can do what he's been doing, right? It's easy to play with a guy like Draymond, who I think is one of the better passers. Who doesn't get, I guess now he's getting a lot of credit for being a great passer, but I think and playing with Steph and Clay off the ball on top of even Andrew Wiggins, who's like a pretty easy guy to play with, it seems like, more or less. He doesn't demand a whole lot in terms of needing the ball in his hand all the time. Anyway, I say all that because I think Poole was put in a great environment to thrive, and Garland was kind of put in a position where he had to be the guy, and he proved that he could do it to at least a decent or sufficient degree. So again, we could come back to this podcast in a year and Poole could still be doing what he's doing. And if he does that for another year and Garland kind of stays, not that Garland would stay the same, but I think, I wouldn't be shocked if Poole surpassed Garland for me in a year from now. But
yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy. Poole's game, I can't believe it sometimes, because I watched it when the Warriors were losing, whatever, 65 games in 2020 or 2019-20. And he would chuck. So I don't know what his percentage was. I would guess it was around like 25% or something like that from three. And then last year, in the middle of the year, he goes to the G League, comes back, and he looked like a different player. I don't know if he was faster or stronger or whatever it was, but his shot looked cleaner. He's hitting from the lot. He best free throw percentage in the league. Yeah, it's right. Whatever happened with him about a year and a half ago.
When you said he's faster, I thought you were going to say he was fasting.
Oh, yeah, him and Kyrie. He reminds me of Kyrie. Am I crazy? I know Kyrie is Kyrie Irving, and there's not really going to be another player like Kyrie Irving. But there's moments when I watch him, and it reminds me
of Kyrie Irving. In what sense he reminds you of Kyrie?
I think the speed, his craftiness, and his ability to shoot both remind me of Kyrie Irving, I think. Now, Kyrie is the craftiest player I've been. People always talking about who had the best handle in the NBA. I've never wavered in saying that I always thought Kyrie is the best handle. But there are moments with Poole's burst and finishing at the rim. He plays a bit more off ball than Kyrie ever has, so maybe it's not the exact same. But anyway,
I can see that. I hadn't thought of that before, but I could definitely see that. Poole, like the burst is awesome. Like that's pretty rare that you get like a shooting guard with that type of burst. I mean, like, let's look at some of the top twos in our game right now, like D-Book. Sure, we can throw Middleton in there, Jaylen Brown, Levine. Like, Levine has the burst, but he's more like Poole seems very more poised.
Yes.
And like in control than some of these guys. And yeah, and it's cool to see. I'm super excited to see him develop. I mean, again, another guy that we'll talk about hasn't played in the playoffs yet. But if we were having this podcast in 24 hours, we might have something to say about him and some of these other guys too. But we've seen a lot of him recently. And yeah, it's been like a huge Poole coming out party. Like, everyone's excited about him. But yeah, I'm just excited to see him develop. But I know you're very high on him, and I've grown very high on him as well.
Yeah. So am I up next then?
Yeah, you're at five, I believe.
Okay. I was a bit torn on this one too. I'm gonna take RJ Barrett in this pick. I was somewhat split. I split between probably him and the guy who you're gonna take after me. I'm not in love with RJ Barrett. I know there's some Knicks fans who think RJ Barrett is like the next coming of Christ, but I don't know if I'd go that far with him. I think he's just been on a trajectory where he's been little improvements each year. It seems like he's become a better shooter, though I know percentages don't always indicate that. So I guess maybe I'm contradicting myself there. But he's becoming at least more comfortable with the corner three over the last 2 years. I noticed that when he came into the league, or even coming out of Duke, I didn't label him as a shooter. But it seems like he can get there. I still am curious to know, what the outcome, I guess maybe what kind of player he'll be. Like, I can't tell if he's a forward or a guard at times. And again, I know that the difference there is minute, but it does matter if he is defending or being guarded by forwards or guards. That will impact who he is in the future. But I like RJ Barrett. I think he's a capable player. I think the floor of RJ Barrett is still a guy that you probably want in your closing five on a good team. And I think the ceiling of RJ Barrett, he could be an all-star one day. I don't see why he couldn't get there on the trajectory he's on. I just want the shooting to be consistent, and it dipped a little bit this year, where last year it seemed like it was going right. So yeah, I know it's not the most exciting pick, but I'll take RJ Barrett.
No, I think Barrett's a fine pick. I agree with everything you're saying. The only thing I'll add, and then we can move on, is I am just curious to see, in my notes for Barrett, I had him at six, or 5-6. I was kind of torn between, but I would just love to see him in a different system. Hmm. Just not because I think that's what he needs, but I'm just curious, what does that look like where he's not, playing 35 plus minutes a game, where, he's not, I don't know. I'm just curious. Like, New York is such a weird environment right now.
Yeah.
With that roster and the Randall hype, and then the lack of Randall hype, the playoff hype, and then the no playoff hype this year.
Totally.
I'd just be curious to see him, in a different system. And I don't have like a ideal team in mind or anything like that. But I'd just be curious to see what he is outside of a Knicks jersey.
Yes.
So I'm at six.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll take Tyler Herro at six.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, I was alluding to it. We haven't seen him play. We're going to see him play tomorrow against the Sixers. I'm very intrigued on that matchup between him and Maxey. I think that's going to be fun to watch. Tyler, I've been hot and cold with him. I think at this point, I've already apologized to him on Twitter. You and I had talked about this. I think it's weird that he's in contention for Sixth Man of the Year when he's played 32 minutes a game this year for the Heat.
Yes.
Which is just crazy to me. But that's just kind of like the way Miami works and Spoelstra has the system.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to like not like Tyler Hero after the bubble, after he torched the Celtics. But I can't the year after the bubble, it was a little bit of a dip, and then the playoffs came around and you know, he played okay. And then this season, he's just been awesome. Like he's been incredible. He doesn't assist as much as you think. I think he's only averaging like 4 assists a game this season.
Yeah.
But his passing has just impressed me a ton. Like so confident on the ball, like drifting right on the right baseline. He has such a good shot there. You know, coming off the curl screens for the three, he's great. Pick and roll with Bam is great. And yeah, there's just not much to like. I mean, other than if you just don't like that he's a white player off the bench.
Yeah.
There's not much to dislike. Like he's very, like his playmaking and scoring is amazing. And I just think he's like, he's probably the best like bucket getter on the Heat, which is crazy.
Yes.
Would you say like, even like, well, I know they got Lowry and stuff, but if I like need a bucket, I don't know if I'd be, I don't know. Would I be as confident with Kyle Lowry dribbling the clock out, and I know that Kyle Lowry's just going to take a three?
Or well, what about Jimmy Butler? Do you not want Jimmy Butler taking that shot?
Well, Jimmy Butler in the playoffs is a different Jimmy Butler in the regular season. So it's true. I guess you would take Jimmy, but like some of the Jimmy games in the regular season were like, what is going on here?
Bad.
But he just becomes the greatest player on earth in the playoffs. So I can factor that in. I guess it would be Jimmy, but consistent scoring, like they give it to Hero like all the time. Like he's kind of carried them through. I think I was telling you on Friday, like the whole Heat system, it seemed like they were just saving all their guys for the playoffs. And right. Hero was just like playing 32 minutes a night, scoring and keeping them in games. And then they close out with Butler and PJ and that's it. And they scrape by these games and they have some blowouts. I think Hero's, there's not much to dislike. Defensively, yeah, whatever, he'll get attacked, but so do every single player we mentioned here, minus RJ, probably get attacked off the pick and roll. So,
totally. Much,
yeah.
It's Jimmy, though, going back to the, yeah. Jimmy has already made 7 threes in the playoffs, and he only made, like, 27 all year. So
that's wild, man.
You're right, he's a different beast.
That's
wild. I agree with the Tyler Hero pick. I like Tyler Hero. He's come off the bench and really helped Miami, even though whatever coming off the bench means in terms of getting the Sixth Man of the Year award. I do really like Tyler Hero, and I think I like him because I actually trust that he's a great shooter. Now, he didn't do everything well. I don't know if his passing is as good as maybe it has seemed at times, but I do like Tyler Hero and think it's great.
I think his passing is amazing right now.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I think, like I said, like he's only averaging, I think, for like 4 assists. But I think some of the looks he gets and some of the hockey assists he gets is great. I mean, him and Bam in the pick and roll is pretty, pretty good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say like he's a top 20 in passing or anything like that, but I think it's coming along.
Yeah, but I like Hero. I had Hero in my as my I had, again Hero and RJ. I went back and forth between.
Right.
But yeah.
Right.
So same page. Okay. So I'm up at 7.
You're up at 7.
Okay. We get a bit washy here, dude.
Yeah, I feel like we're gonna lose each other here now.
You think we're gonna lose each other? I feel like we could be close. Anyway, I have Keldon Johnson at 7.
Okay.
That might be a bit early to take him, but I think I like what I saw from him this year. I don't know if he's as good of a shooter as he shot this year, but I think if that shot can go down again, similar to what I said about RJ. I think the worst case scenario for Keldon Johnson is he's a very capable closing five player on your team. I think he does a lot of things well. I think being coached by Popovich has really helped him in his development. Pop trusting him on Team USA was a big deal to me. But again, I think if his shooting's for real, if he can really shoot the three ball as well as he's been shooting it this year, which is his free throw percentage might be an indicator that maybe that isn't true, as it's not as great as you'd think. But I do like Keldon Johnson. I think he plays hard, and he's a guy that I'd want playing for my team if I was drafting. Now, again, not a sexy pick here at number seven, but I think I just trust Keldon Johnson. He's a smart player. And other players seem to trust him too. Even, again, just going back to the Team USA talk, he was liked on Team USA as a second-year player, essentially. He was a 28th pick or whatever. But anyway, yeah, that's right. All I kind of had to say about him. But what do you have?
I had him at seven as well, but there's – this player that I reluctantly had teetering between Barrett and him at 5-6 that I will take at eight, and I will echo everything you're saying about Keldon because I think they're very similar. So I'm going to take DeAndre Hunter at eight.
Okay.
And yeah, he's just a player I would want on my team just for the way he defends. Like you said with Johnson, if the shooting's legit, then that's more reason to pick him. He was kind of absent in the Miami series with as far as shooting the ball, but he had some really good defensive stints, and he's just like a solid wing player that I like. And I think it'd be too bad to miss taking him later just because he has like the prototypical body and like a lot of skill sets that are exciting. And all the same with being said about Keldon, and Keldon, to me, I view them pretty similarly. I'd be like totally fine if you obviously had Keldon over him, that's totally fine. But I think those type of players are so valuable. Yes. And if they can develop mainly with the shooting, then yeah, it's exciting.
Do you think the guy who I'm going to say next is also kind of similar to Keldon and DeAndre Hunter? Because I feel like the guy I'm going to say next is just an echo of everything we've just been saying.
Yeah. I think I know who you're going to take at nine. But probably minus the shooting, I'm going to guess.
Nope. So we're going back and forth. I'm actually going to take Cam Johnson at nine. I had him actually ahead of DeAndre Hunter. Now, and I think Cam Johnson, again, I'm not taking ceiling with Cam Johnson. He's older than I thought he was. He's 26 years old. I knew he was old coming out of the draft. I don't know if he was a senior or a super senior coming out of the draft. But again, seeing what he does on Phoenix, he's been in a great environment too. So that might be to his credit, but I think that's made him a lot better of a player from the standpoint that he's come into the league as a great shooter and has been put in a position where that shooting and I think defensive capability is quite valuable on Phoenix, where he, yes, has come off the bench, but I don't know if they've been closing with him every game, but they would definitely feel comfortable closing with him. And so going back to what I was saying about Keldon and even RJ, now RJ is a bit better in my opinion, obviously, which is why I took him before, but I would trust Cam Johnson in big moments. I think he's smart and I think his shooting will keep him on the floor and in the league.
He'll be relevant for a long time. I agree. Yeah.
So
okay. We're gonna. I like everything you said about Johnson. By the way, I think that's a very fair take. Yeah, we're gonna probably lose each other here.
Where do you have Cam Johnson? I know who you thought I was gonna say, but where do you have Cam Johnson?
I had Johnson at 12, which I'm
okay.
Very. Yeah, honestly, 9 to 14 for me. I think I could switch. Actually, sorry, 9 to 13, my 14th guy I feel fine about, and there's a couple other guys that I could probably take. 9 to 13, I feel pretty interchangeable about.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to take Brandon Clark.
So
I actually had Brandon Clark a little high. Now I'm at 10, correct?
Yeah, you're now, 10.
Yeah, I'll probably take Clark at 10. Clark, to me, last season was one of the he'd be my number one disappointing player. I was most disappointed with Brandon Clark last season. I just thought he was so strong in his rookie campaign. He had the very high field goal percentage, that little floater shot. Him and Ja were kind of like revitalizing the Grizzlies. But then now, like with these playoffs, I mean, he's just been such a hustler and like such a defensive presence that I'm like, man, it's hard not like I gravitate towards that type of player. I think he's a bit of a dog and I like him. No, I'm not like super sold on that pick at 10. But yeah, I'll take him. And we talked about him a bit, but I think he's just a hustler. And I will say this. Okay. But this is another qualm I have with Brandon Clark. Brandon Clark was born in Canada, but moved to Arizona, I believe, when he was 3 years old.
Yeah.
So please take him off your top 10 Canadian players. Please take him off I agree. I don't, if you went up to him and said, "Hey man, nice to see that Canadians in the NBA playing for the former Vancouver Grizzlies," I bet you he'd nod his head and say, "Yeah, I do
Yeah,
not
right.
think he identifies as a Canadian. I could be totally out to lunch. I don't know this guy personally or anything like that, but I am kind of out on having him as a Canadian player. He's not playing for
Yeah.
the Canadian national team. I'm out on him. He
Yeah, I
moved to
didn't
the
even
States when
realize
he
he's
was
not.
three.
Yeah, and he's not playing for the Canadian national team. I didn't even think about that. If he's
I
not
don't
doing
think
that,
so, yeah.
then I think Canada should stop touting him as if he's some
Yeah.
great Canadian inspiration. But
Give me a Linux every day, baby.
dude, Kelly Olynyk, baby. I'm Kelowna boy. Love the man. Dude, where's his
Hello.
redraft?
Yeah.
I like Brandon Clarke. I actually didn't even have him on my top 14 because
Okay, totally fair. Yeah, totally fine.
again, I've just been underwhelmed. I remember after his rookie year, I was all hyped on him. I remember finding out he was from Vancouver again, not realizing that he spent most of his life in America 2 years ago. And then since then, I've just been underwhelmed. He did play hard
Yeah.
today. I noticed today, I don't know how many minutes he had, but I
Yeah, he
felt like
was
he
a
was playing
dog
hard.
today.
Yeah.
I was very hesitant to put him on the redraft, but I was like, man, I'm just gonna ignore last season, his sophomore year. I'm gonna take his rookie season, I'm gonna take this year, and I'll roll with it. But I think that's totally fine if you don't
Yeah.
have him in the top 14.
Yep.
You're at 11?
I am next. So I at 11 have Terrence Mann at 11. So
Ooh, nice.
yeah, again, somewhat this again, I'm going back and forth on taking safe picks versus projecting a little bit. I think what Terrence Mann did against the Jazz last year is too hard to ignore, being a fluke and being a very, I don't know, I wouldn't say vital, but an important member on a Clippers team. To which he's being developed on GMs. I know on the GM poll, he scored very high on what was it? There's a question about what players will take a leap, or which players do you think will improve the most this year, or which players taken outside of that. I don't know. There's something that the GMs were touting
Right,
Terrence Mann
right.
on. But again, in the Clippers games that I watched in the playoff series with the Jazz last year, he looked great and he looked like a guy that could still turn a corner. Now, again, as years go by, and he's older too, but as years go by, yeah, maybe there's less and less like maybe it's less likely that could happen. But I was just too impressed by what I saw from him as a shot maker and as a shooter last year in the playoffs. So that's why I got Terrence Mann.
Beauty. I like
Yeah.
it. 12. Okay, now I'm gonna have to nix one of these guys because we're too deep. I'm gonna have to make a game time decision here. Man, I'm gonna try not to be biased as well, but I am going to take Nikhil at 12.
Okay. Wow.
I think Nikhil is a very, very good scorer. I really enjoyed watching him play with the Pels last year.
Yep.
I think he's honestly, we could have this podcast a year from now and this guy could be out of the league. I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
He's just kind of got the ultimate green light, and so I took him like later towards the end because there's like a couple guys I'm just taking a flyer on. So I don't know. I'm holding out hope for him. My alternative pick, and if
I
gun,
guarantee you I'm taking your alternative pick next pick. I guarantee
okay, I gun to my head, if we were doing the draft live, I'd probably take my alternative pick, but I'm just giving Nikhil a chance. So that's it. Who you taking at 13?
I'm taking Grant Williams. You had Grant Williams, right? He
That's
was the other
right.
guy.
Yeah,
But
100%.
to me,
I had him at 11.
I would never have taken. I know you don't want to be biased, but I would never have taken Nikhil over Grant Williams. And again, maybe that's because Grant Williams, it's really only great year has been this year. I know he was okay in previous years, but really the shooting this year is the 3-point shooting is for real with Grant
Yeah,
Williams, and it's
Lethal
backed
Shooter,
up.
fix that, man. Shout out to Lethal Shooter.
Yeah. So who? Yeah. So what? Can you talk a little bit about that? Because his leap from 1 year to another in shooting is almost unheard of. Or maybe is it just sample size? Like, was he a good shooter in college? It seems bizarre that he's shooting as well as he has this year.
I'm kind of low key upset that you're high on Grant because now I feel dumb for not
Well,
taking him when I.
I might have taken him before as well with Terrence Mann, but anyway, you can talk about that
Nikhil better just changes life and career for me.
one. Yeah, which is a big ask, dude. I don't, he's already
Hey,
been traded.
no, once Donovan gets traded, that's going to be Nikhil's team.
They're just going to hand the keys to Nikhil, and we're all good.
They're handing the keys to Nikhil and Jordan Clarkson. Can you imagine the shots that they're creating?
I will say, for all New Orleans' challenges this year, they aren't the worst talent evaluator. And I think if whatever they didn't see in Nikhil, I worry about, which is why I'm hesitant on him. But I'm happy you're in on him. But anyway,
I'm not going to retract it. I picked him, but...
Talk about Grant Williams, because what happened? How did he get so much better shooting?
Yeah, so he was working with Lethal Shooter. Who, those who don't know, Lethal Shooter is, just a Drew Hamlin type trainer. I'm sure if Lethal Shooter heard that, he'd be offended and say he's very different than Drew Hamlin. But anyways, yeah, I just think he just worked on his shot. He was kind of working that PJ Tucker, you know, corner three. That's kind of where you need to be. You need to be the defensive stopper, corner three. And he's stepped up, and he's had a great playoffs. He's clamped Durant. He was hitting some threes where last year in the playoffs, when Grant was in the corner wide open, you're not holding your breath. You're like, he's probably going to miss it. But he's hitting them this year, and it looks just more fluid. He has a really good feel for the game. I don't see what he does despite shooting and defending, which, maybe in today's game and today's age, you don't need to do much other than that. But he's not much off the dribble. He's a good screener, which, is very underrated. But, I really like Grant. He's been awesome. And I hope he has a better game, too, and a better series against the Bucks.
Well, is he – I think, again, you watch a lot of Celtics, and not that I don't watch Celtics, but not that I do either. I just think when his shot looks good. Like, it's not like I almost feel like when you go talk about Desmond Bane, like his shot goes in more than I think it does based on how his shot looks, if that makes sense. Where Grant Williams' shot, it looks good. I don't know what about it. It just looks like it's going in. Again, it doesn't mean so much if we just go look at percentages, but obviously there's been things that have happened that have made him a good shooter. But I like Grant Williams. I think the PJ Tucker, I don't know if that's you would be a better tell if that's a great comparison, but if his floor was being a peak PJ Tucker, I'm like, that's a very valuable member on a good team. Is when we're at 13, 14 in the draft, I'm happy to get that guy.
Yeah. So I'm at 13 now?
You're at 14. Is it 14? You're end of the draft right now.
Oh, man. Okay. So I have two more flyers. And then I have one sneaky pick. I think I'm going to have to do my sneaky pick. This would be like my equivalent of picking Rob Williams last year at 9.
Which was a good pick.
I'm going to take Daniel Gafford at 14.
Okay, I saw him there, but I didn't have him on my board. But
yeah, I'm going to take Gafford if the league and NBA fans are the especially like analytical movement. You and I talked about the DPOY thing on Friday as well. If they are going to continue to value rim protection and defensive bigs, Daniel Gafford is up there. When he plays, he doesn't get a ton of minutes, but when he plays, he's very impactful in the game. He had some really good stints in Chicago, had some good stints with the Wizards here with Thomas Bryant being out. He's kind of a flyer pick, not so much as my other guys. We'll talk about who we missed in the draft. I like him. I think he's like a very slow big man. Like he's kind of like a Gobert, like even slower, but
yeah,
he's just a great rim protector and he's good, decent in the pick and roll and he plays hard. So why not?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that. I thought about it.
Who'd you miss out on?
I had Kobe White. I just deleted my list to make the order so that I had everyone here. I had Kobe White, who else? I had Kevin Porter Jr. was also one on my list too. Okay. And he was paired with, who did I have him tied at the end? I'm just trying to remember because I just deleted them as I rewrote the order. He was paired with, at the bottom of my list, I don't remember. But I had Kevin Porter Jr. was an actor out there maybe. I'm projecting a little bit with him. He seems like the worst teammate in the world. Like, I don't know if anyone likes him. But I had him. Yeah, I didn't have Tyler.
I had White and KPJ as well. I guess the only thing crazy about my list is the Nikhil thing.
The other guy I had, I did have, I don't know if we were going to do undrafted, I did have Lou Dort as an undrafted player this draft. Was also thought of.
we always got to talk about the undrafted. And there was a couple of them this year. Yeah. So Lou Dort's obviously the standout.
Yeah.
Canadian. Another Canadian, too, who I think is very good and is going to be a good role player if he continues to work hard. O'Shea Brissett with the Pacers.
Okay.
Undrafted this year.
Okay.
There's someone else. I don't have the list in front of me. But, yeah, I mean, we're redrafting. So Lou Dort didn't get redrafted. But I think I'm going to speak for you here. If he was drafted, he'd 100% be on this redraft at some point.
Yeah, I think I would have picked him if I was allowed to at 14, if I had that pick. Like if I had you instead, I would have taken him ahead of Coby White or
Gaffer. Or KPJ. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or KPJ, yeah. But
who's the biggest bust in this draft, Paul?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Let me rephrase that. Sorry. Because, yeah, like I've always said Zion's like the biggest bust that I think. A player that was actually taken high here who you're like just absolutely confused that he's taken that high?
I think at the time I was a little bit surprised by DeAndre Hunter, but I mean, we talked about him and there's a lot of good with DeAndre Hunter, but I remember in the moment because Atlanta traded for that pick. I forget how they get him again.
Yes. Yeah, so that was the Lakers pick actually.
Yes. Right.
And then the Lakers, I forget exactly. I believe that wasn't the Bazemore thing. No.
To me, I'm like, that was the biggest standout on, I don't know. I was confused at the time because I know he came out, he was older too. And I don't know if that was Atlanta's attempt to like remake. I remember there was talk. They wanted to remake the Warriors where they got Trey and then DeAndre Hunter was their Klay Thompson. I don't know. But that to me, I wouldn't say he's a bust, but I was just maybe confused at the time on that. Yeah. I wouldn't say any of these guys have been bust. Like I wouldn't say RJ Zion or Ja. I know you think Zion.
No, but I'm a little bust so far.
But I think Garland surpassed expectations. I know Jarrett Culver. I'm like, whatever, Jarrett Culver. But
the Jarrett Culver one to me is a little weird because I just don't see – like Jordan McLaughlin's a better player than Jarrett Culver right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that was weird.
The other one too that I'm – like PJ Washington at 12.
Yeah, bizarre. Over Tyler Hero. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Do you as a Celtics fan wish you didn't take – or wish you had one pick earlier? Didn't you trade that pick? Didn't they trade down or something? Like, couldn't they have had 13? Wasn't there some weird scenario where they lost it? They, like, lost the coin flip or something? It was bizarre where they almost had Tyler Hero. I forget how that happened. But
I forget that, too. I think Roro was the – I think they were going to pick him anyway. At least that's what they said.
Oh, I see.
But, man, I don't even – I think he might be out of the league. I think he's got traded to the Rockets, and I don't know if he's
– Huh.
Let me just do a quick check on.
Wasn't he on the Spurs?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, he's on the Spurs.
Yeah, that's what I thought he was. But I haven't checked.
mock trade deadline. I wanted him to go to the Rockets for Tucker.
No, dude. Yeah, I don't know. Boston fans seem to like Romeo Langford at least in trade talks more than they liked him on the court.
Yeah,
but you probably feel the same way about Aaron Nesmith. But
Do you have do you have the draft in front of you?
I do. I got it in front of me.
Who's the best player in the second round?
The best player in the second round.
Is it Mann?
I would say Terrence Mann Terrence Mann would be the highest of any of the guys we picked. We didn't even talk about Nick Claxton. We could talk about, but I'm not that interested in Nick Claxton.
I'm not that interested if you can.
Yeah.
Free throws in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was like almost worse than Ben Simmons or worse than Ben Simmons. THT, we didn't talk about, but I don't want to talk about THT at all. I think he's the most over-talked about shit player in the NBA.
Yeah, that's fair.
We could talk about Eric Paschal. Nope. Gafford. What? Like you can convince me of Gafford too. Like he was second round, but
yeah. Bull Bull, man.
Yeah, I saw they have Bull Bull too.
I'll be a Bull Bull fan till I die, but.
Yeah, this is an interesting draft, though. We're like looking back at last year's draft. Like, this is to give you context. Last year's draft at 9, 10, 11. 9, 10, 11 were Miles Bridges, Rob Williams, and Gary Trent when we were redrafting, which were already a bit more. And then we had Bagley, but whatever. But then we had Jalen Brunson and Mitchell Robinson after that.
Right.
But my point is, I felt like later in last year's draft seemed a bit deeper. Where here we're taking Nikhil Alexander Walker. Grant Williams is not bad, but I don't see him being a Jalen Brunson or even Gary Trent Jr. kind of player, right? Well, maybe Gary Trent. He could be – Gary Trent's maybe been underwhelming at times. But I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah. I think last year's draft was deeper.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. The Nikhil thing's not going to bother me, but that's okay. It's on the record, man. I can't take it out.
You can't take it out, but good draft nonetheless, my brother.
Who do you got in tomorrow's games?
Tomorrow's not the first Phoenix game, is it? Or tomorrow the first Phoenix game?
It is, yeah. Yeah, it's the first Phoenix game and the first Miami game.
So I do think that Phoenix will probably win the series. I think Dallas could be a sneaky upset, but I know that doesn't really say anything. If I had to put my money on the line, of course I would pick Phoenix.
I thought you were wanting Dallas.
What? No, I like Dallas, but I feel
more
like
of a thought.
I'm almost covering my basis in saying that I think Dallas could provide challenges to Phoenix, but I do think if I had gun to my head, I would pick Phoenix. You made a good point about Luka and rim protection, and
yes,
when they play five out, it is quite challenging for them to defend at the highest level.
Yeah, and we were texting about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was your point, so I'm not stealing that from you.
I was just gonna kind of say it on the air. So
yeah,
Paul and I were texting about this, but I was just my point was the Mavericks really struggle now, I think, to protect the rim without Porzingis.
Yeah,
and we saw that in Game One, especially against the Jazz, where Mitchell was like, he had like I think like 30 points in the second half or something stupid. He couldn't get it going in the first half because he just was trying all these jump shots. And then he found like, oh, I can drive on Davis Bertans every single time and get fouled or just dunk it. And right. Davis Bertans can't do anything.
Right.
I just think, I mean, Book and Paul are just going to expose some of these bigs, even Kleba, man. Kleba's okay.
Yeah.
But nah, like Dwight Powell, get out of here. Like Chris Paul is going to cook them. Like, yeah. I don't see who's going to protect the rim against. And then you're also not even mentioning Ayton. Like, Ayton had a good series last year.
Yeah.
He had a really good series last round. And he was shooting the ball well, and he's looking great. He's not hesitating as much on those like elbow jumpers, on those little floaters he gets from Chris Paul. So I think that could be a problem for the Mavs. But also, like I said on Friday, defensively, the Suns have some stuff to figure out as well. So if they can't figure out Luka and Dinwiddie coming at them, then we have ourselves a series. But I'd be leaning towards Phoenix in that one.
Yeah.
And what about our
dude? Yeah, I'm taking Miami in the other game too. I would have taken Miami even if Embiid was healthy. I'm just not a huge believer in. Even though Harden has been probably one of my favorite players over the last 10 years, I think the drop that people are talking about, he does look slower. Something about his – I don't know if it's his – everyone's saying his weight. I don't want to blame it on his weight because I feel like guys like that, even people chirp him for – I read a tweet today that said he's out for game one because of erectile dysfunction, referring to Miami strip clubs. Like, honestly, stuff like that is comedic. Like, it's so funny. But I don't necessarily believe that. Like, I think Harden is a workhorse. I do believe that. I think in the first – 8 years of his career show that, but he's lost a step and something is odd about that. Again, it just might be age. It might be out of shape. I don't know, but it doesn't look the same, which is why I have a hard time believing. Max, he could have a few games here and be great, but I still would take Miami. I think Miami's maybe the smartest team. If I had to take the smartest teams left, I would take Golden State and Miami and then Boston just a tier below. And then everyone else a tier below all those teams. Even Phoenix has looked kind of odd. Like they looked off first round. So I don't know. I think Miami's very well coached, and I think they'll be great.
Yeah, I have the Heat too. Even with Embiid healthy as well, that's totally fine. I just think they're gonna just cause havoc for Embiid, and if he plays game 3 and 4, he's out for 1 and 2. They're gonna cause havoc for him. I think Tobias Harris might just disappear in this series. He was very good in the Raptors series, even defensively as well.
Yeah,
but I just don't see him getting a lot of looks. And I mean, Lowry's not playing game one. Butler's apparently good to go. He has this weird knee thing going on. But I think they're just going to clamp him, man. I think they're going to clamp him. Part of me, like, selfishly wants, like, you know, like a 35 to 40 point Harden game just for one, just to, like, you know, extend his legacy a little bit. But it doesn't look good. He's definitely looking on the decline, and And you're right, I can't pinpoint it. It's not just a weight thing. It's not just like the team he's on, because I mean,
yeah,
he can pretty much do what he wants in Philly. Like him and Max, the only thing I'm optimistic about with Philly is him and Max, he kind of seem to figure each other out in game six the Raptors. Yeah. And that could be interesting to watch. So it'll be a good series.
When Maxie's on, Maxie's right. I really like Maxie a lot. It's funny, but yeah, going back to Miami thing, I almost feel like Bam is an afterthought. So I don't know why, but in my head, I think of Butler, I think of Lowry, I think of Hero. And then I'm like, oh yeah. And then they also have Bam. So yeah.
Who's no scrub at all.
No scrub. He's so sick. And on top of that, Max Strus, I really like a lot too. He's just pretty much a better
vote. Max Strus undrafted 2019.
Oh, really? Was he on that list too? Absolutely. He was on that list, I didn't even know. I would have taken him.
Jogged my memory. He was undrafted.
Max Strus is dope. He is on this list. I would take him above Duncan Robinson at this point, which obviously Miami would too, just why they're not playing Duncan Robinson. But anyway, that's what it is. So,
yeah. All right, brother. Well, thanks for going through this. We did our annual podcast. We got to watch a game together. We haven't watched a game together. And then we'll see if we can do another pod before the finals or something. That'd be good.
100%. Anytime, brother.
All right. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Okay. Thanks, Nate.
Catch you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.